All right, so this week's parsha is Parshas Mishpatim, and it has a plethora of laws, a lot of laws, but there is also a narrative at the end, but I want to focus on one law, because it's just fascinating, okay? So it says here, Ki teitze esh u'mitza'akotzim, when fire is started and it spreads to thorns, so that stacked, standing or growing grain is consumed, Nechal Gadisho Kawa Kama Ohasade Shalem Yishalem Hamavir Etabera. He who started the fire must make restitution. Okay.
This is part of the Parsha?
This is the Parsha, yeah. It's amazing. It's like one law after the other. It's very dense, they're very cryptic, and there's so much written on each one of these because it's very cryptic. You need to fill in the blanks. And so basically a lot of Torah Shabbal Peh, the idea of the oral tradition comes to basically fill out the blanks, because what is it, what exactly, you know, what are the conditions here? Okay. So one of the discussions that comes out of this is how do you view fire in terms of damages? Meaning, if I start a fire and then it goes and it does damage, like I start a fire, forest fire, you know, like that, or one of those deals, like am I obligated? And if I am obligated for damages caused, so how do we view that? Okay, so so for example, is it as if I caused a direct, or is it indirect in terms of what I did? Okay.
Okay.
Let's see. How would we look at this? So Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish disagree about how do we understand this. Now, this is another case, a little bit different, okay? But let's see how this goes down. Okay, let's say this. The Gemara attempts another, okay, come in here, a Mishnah. One who sends a fire, i.e. places a burning object in the hand of a deaf mute, an imbecile, or a minor, is exempt for any damage later caused by the fire according to human laws, but liable according to the laws of heaven, meaning that he would not be held liable in court, but nevertheless, he remains responsible to pay for what he has done. Now, we talked about this idea of, how do you view it? So the Gemara breaks it down into Esho Mishum Chitzo, Esho Mishum Imono. Chitzo is like a arrow. So do we look at it like I shot an arrow? Or do I look at it like my property went and did damage to someone? Okay? So you'll ask, okay, so what's the practical difference between the two? Okay, so now, the Gemara clarifies. Granted, according to the one who says that one's liability for the damage caused by his fire is due to its similarity to his arrows, this case is similar to the damage caused by the arrows of a deaf mute or an imbecile or a minor, and this is why the one who gave them the fire is exempt from liability.
That's right? Baloney.
Well, again, because now it's not, I didn't directly cause it. I gave it over to someone else, and now he's on the hook.
No.
No?
No. You gave it to someone who has no judgment.
Okay, but what does this have to do with judgment? That's judgment?
The imbecile,
right,
the minor, well, I guess I think they're lumping deaf mute.
Yeah, they're putting it all together. Yeah, they're all like,
okay. So that person does not have judgment or insight as to what the danger of that thing could be. It's like giving a loaded gun to a crazy person.
Okay,
say,
good.
Here, go play with this.
Good. Okay, but let's see this. But according to the one who says that one's liability is for the damage caused by fire, by his fire, is due to its similarity to his property. If he were to convey his ox to a deaf mute or an imbecile or a minor, would he also not be liable? So that's your argument. So like if I give my property over to someone that has no judgment.
Correct.
So then in that case, what do we say there? So that is impossible, as there is an explicit statement in the Braisa saying that he would be liable.
Okay.
So then he goes like this. So the Gemara answers, but it was stated already about this that Reish Lakish says in the name of Chizkiah, they taught that one is exempt from the damage caused by fire that he had entrusted in the care of a deaf, mute, and imbecile or a minor only in the case where he conveyed a coal to him and the deaf, mute fanned the coal into a flame, which then caused damage. But if he conveyed an open flame to him and it caused damage, the one who gave him the flame is liable. Meaning, so if I gave you something that's 100% already going, like this is a thing that has properties that will damage,
yes.
So then giving it to a person who has no judgment, I'm liable. But if it's a case where it was another step away from being something that's dangerous, it's semi-dangerous, so that might be different, okay? So now what's the reason for this? This is because the damage is self-evident, i.e., it is clear that damage will ensue, and it is as if he placed a goring ox under his care. Therefore, like the smoking gun, like the gun. If one's liability for damage classified as fire is due to its similarity to damage caused by one's property, he will be liable in this case, right? As opposed to if I say it's, meaning the idea of looking at fire is either my property or if it's an arrow. So if it's my property and I give you something that will then in turn go, so even though it's indirect, but I've handed over something that's going to damage, that's what I'm liable for. But if I say that fire is only like an arrow, that means only if I shoot it direct. But if there's any steps in between,
then you're not liable.
Maybe not. I might be something else, but not necessarily for direct damage, right? So now,
okay.
So Rav Yochanan, who holds that one's liability for damage caused by fire is due to its similarity to one's arrows, says that he is exempt even if he conveyed an open flame to him, because he holds that is the deaf mute's handling of the flame that causes the blaze, and is therefore not similar to a case of an arrow shot. The one who conveys a fire to the deaf mute does not become liable for the damage until he hands the deaf mute chopped wood, kindling chips, and a lamp, as in that case, the damage that will ensue is self-evident, and it is as if he started the blaze himself. Okay?
He would be liable.
So, right, so he's saying, so basically when we say, so when we create this, like, a system of how to look at this, so do we look at it as has to be direct in order to be liable, or it doesn't necessarily, it can be an indirect, i.e., I give you my property, but it's a dangerous piece of property, but that then goes in turn and damages, I would be on the hook. So that's the machlok. So the disagreement between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is if there are steps in between, then I would be off the hook for that. Okay.
I don't know. Okay, but I don't necessarily agree. But
okay, so let's see what this. So then he says like this. So this is this week's parasha. Amar Rava Kra.
Okay.
Masnisa Masayla Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, so Rava said a verse and a braita both support Rav Yochanan's opinion. The verse supporting his opinion is as it is written, if a fire breaks out, ki teitzei esh, indicating that the fire breaks out on its own. Yet the verse continues and says, the one who ignited the fire shall pay, indicating that the fire was ignited by a person. Conclude from the verse that one's liability for the damage caused by his fire is due to its similarity to damage caused by his arrows, as the resolution of the apparent inconsistency in the verse is that it relates to an individual as if he had himself started the blaze, and that is why he's obligated to pay for the damage. Now, again, let's look at the verse. The verse says, Ki teitzei esh. Wait, am I getting the right pasuk? Nope. Yeah. This is the pasuk, right. Ki teitzei esh, when fire is started, teitzei is it goes out, and matzah kotzim, and finds thorns with nachal, and then it eats the nachal, it eats the gedish, which is a stacked or a kama standing, or basically grain. Or
hold on a second. What's the word after
gedish?
Is it o?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
V'nechal gedish o hakama o hatzadeh. Okay, so you have this. So it goes out, teitzei, eish, finds thorns, eats the gadish, the kama, or the sada.
Yep.
Shalem yishalem hamavir et habeira. So the person has to pay who started the fire. He who started the fire. Hamavir et habeira.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So that's it. That's the totality of the thing. So he's saying, if it goes out, it sounds like it's going out on its own. But then at the end of the verse, it says,
"He who started the fire must make restitution." Okay.
So he says over here, he's saying, "Where did I go here?" He's saying, "Look at the way it reads." The verse and the Braita both support Rav Yochanan's opinion. The verse supporting his opinion is as it's written: if the fire breaks out, indicating the fire breaks out on its own, right? The beginning of the verse says like it happened on its own. But then at the end it says, the one who ignited the fire shall pay, indicating that the fire was ignited by a person. Conclude from the verse that one's liability for the damage caused by his fire is due to its similarity to the damage caused by his arrows, as the resolution of the apparent inconsistency in the verse is that it relates to the individual as if he had himself started the blaze, and that is why he is obligated to pay for the damage. Meaning, at the end, is the one
conclude from the verse that one's liability for the damage caused by fire is due to its similarity to damage. So the arrows is like, oh, I shot the arrow. Okay,
it's like a resolution. Right. So listen, on the surface, I start a fire and I walk away, okay? But then that fire continues to burn and goes and spreads and burns down 10 buildings, okay?
Okay.
So let's say it this way, what burned the buildings down? The fire. Correct. Right? So when you look at fire, fire is kind of an interesting thing because you're creating something that in turn will take on a life of its own, so to speak, okay? So how do you express that? So that's what it's saying. If the fire breaks out, as if to say, this idea that the aspect of fire having its own mind, so to speak, is expressed in the pasuk when it says here at the beginning. It says, when a fire goes out, when a fire is started, when really what it means in the literal translation is kitetzeh, when a fire goes out, when it spreads.
When it's spreading,
okay?
Yeah.
And then at the end, though, it says, Shalem Yishalem Hamavir Tabera, he who started the fire must make restitution. What's being captured by this is the fact that it's really expressing the nature of fire having its own mind, so to speak, in a sense. But the flip side is that we hold accountable the guy who started it, right?
Correct.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Good. And not only do we hold him accountable, it says, if he shot an arrow. So like we're saying, basically, you, man who started the fire, and then it goes off and starts burning down buildings. We look at it as if, you're the guy who directly...
You did it.
It's exactly. It's like you have those... the guy takes out like a flamethrower. It's like, but even though that's like the furthest thing from it. Okay? So, the Braita supporting his opinion is as it is taught. The verse concerning liability for the fire opened with the reference to damage caused by one's possessions, as it is written, if a fire breaks out, indicating that his responsibility for the fire is the same as his responsibility for any of his possessions that cause damage. And it concludes with the reference to damage caused by one's body, as the verse refers to the person by calling him the one who ignited the fire, telling you that his liability for the damage caused by his fire is due to its similarity to his arrows. So the fact that it kind of closes it out with that, you see this idea, it might look like it is a possession thing. Like the fire is like your possession, that you caused damage with possession. And like our practical case would be if there's something in between, like I hand it off to someone in between that might not be a person of not, who has judgment, but either way, that might break it up if I look at it as chitzo, because chitzo is saying arrow means I shot it direct. So if there's something that's in between, that would perhaps suspend the responsibility. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess so.
In a way, but that seems to be the way. Okay, so now, or then there are other cases. Let's say you have something that is the object that gets damaged might be encased in something. So would you be responsible for that if it got damaged, if it had something, like there's something standing between? And so now there's something there, and then that goes away. So that really, like when you started the fire, the circumstances would have been that it shouldn't have damaged anything, right? Let's say.
This is part of the parsha. So this parsha has lots of laws about damages. Or,
right. So it has a lot of everything. Right. This parsha is like a treasure trove, treasure trove of these laws. Now. It's what, I mean, the question really is, if you're looking for, like, as you study this, to find the...
Wait, go back to the one about the ox. It's so funny.
Oh, you want to see here? Ox. Okay, yeah, you want to see the ox case?
No, but it's funny, because I remember hearing the... it's funny.
Yeah.
The weekend before I got married, which was not this time of year, it must have been something else, whatever. I went to a shul right near where we were living. Because Randy went home for the weekend before the wedding was on a Sunday, and I was alone by myself. I went to a shul, and they talked about these kind of cases. I was like, I remembered it. Anyway,
okay.
Sorry.
Okay, no. So that's, but there's like, the question is really the pattern. Like, how do you understand the pattern? Because it starts talking about a Jewish slave, and...
This is all about legal damages.
It's a lot of everything. It starts out, it says, let's say you have a case of where you have a Jewish slave. You acquire a Jewish slave for 6 years. He'll work for you. On the seventh year, he'll go out for free. And if he came single, he shall leave single. If he had a wife, his wife shall leave with him. So then if his master got him a wife and he had kids with the with that woman that the master gave, that actually stays the master's, and he goes out with whatever he came in.
Oh God!
Yeah. And then, terrible. But then, if listen to what it says, and then it says, if the slave loves, says a hafti asadni, I love my master, my wife, and my child, I don't want to go out. So then we take him and we pierce his ear. Okay, and they say the reason they pierce his ear is because the ear that heard that we're supposed to be slaves to God. Saying, I'd rather be a slave to this mortal being than to God. You know, so like, it's like that, the ear that heard that, and...
Oh, show me the word ear. I learned that word, ayin, right?
Oh, yeah, but it doesn't have it here. But something of it does, no. As no is his ear. As no. Ozen.
As no.
Right.
Is that the word for ear?
Ear, yeah.
It was ayin.
No, ayin is eye.
Oh, ayin is eye. Yeah. Okay, as no, God.
Okay, now, so fine. But going back to this case, so fine. I want to show you something very interesting. Now, they have this thing called agarata, and they have halacha. Halacha is like the law. Agarata is more of the homiletic, okay? Listen to this homiletic, okay? Rav Ami and Rav Asi sat before Rav Yitzchak Nafcha. This is a Gemara in Baba Kama on Samach HaMabez. One sage said to Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, let the master say words of halacha. And the other sage said to Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, let the master say words of agadah. So Rav Yitzchak Nafcha began to say words of Agadah, but one sage did not let him. So he began to say the words of Halacha, but the other sage did not let him. Meaning, the one who wanted to hear Agadah, when he started with Halacha, he interrupted him. And when the one who wanted to hear Halacha, and he started with Agadah, he basically couldn't get off the ground because he was being, you know, each one was getting in the way of him teaching one or the other. So fine. So Rav Yitzchak Nafcha says to them, I will relate a parable. To what can this be compared? It can be compared to a man who has two wives, one young and one old. The young wife pulls out his white hairs so that her husband will appear younger. The old wife pulls out his black hair so that he will appear older. And it turns out that he is bald from here and from there, i.e. completely bald due to the actions of both his wives. So basically saying, listen, guys, you're not letting me teach because when I try to teach Agada, the halacha guy's stopping. And when I want to try to teach halacha, the Agada guy's stopping. So we're ending up bald here. We're ending up with nothing. So he says, now watch this. Rav Yitzchak Nafcha continued and said to them, if so, I'll say to you a matter that is appropriate to both of you. Okay? I'm going to teach something that covers both, which contains both halacha and Agada. In the verse,
Agada, by the way.
Agada is like, I guess, the homiletic. Okay, it's more of a this like a non-halachic teaching, more of like philosophy or an idea. So in the verse that states, if a fire breaks out and catches it in thorns, this is our parsha. So so the term breaks out indicates that it breaks out by itself. Yet the continuation of the verse states, the one who kindled the fire shall pay compensation, which indicates that he must pay only if the fire spread due to his negligence.
So wait a minute, the one who kindled something, which indicates only if the fire spread. So if he makes the fire and it goes out by itself.
Yeah, so nothing damaged, you're not on the hook, but if it spreads due to his negligence, he's on the hook. Okay.
Got it.
So the verse can be explained allegorically. The Holy One, blessed be he, said that although the fire broke out in the temple due to the sins of the Jewish people, it is incumbent upon me to pay restitution for the fire that I kindled. Okay, listen to this. I, God, kindled a fire in Zion, as it is stated. The Lord has accomplished his fury. Okay. He has poured out his fierce anger, and he has kindled a fire in Zion, which has devoured its foundations. From Lamentations. And then it says, in Zechariah, it says, and I will build it with fire in the future, as it is stated. For I, says the Lord, will be for her a wall of fire round about, and I will be the glory in her midst. Vani eya la l'chomat esh, a wall of fire saviv around it.
V'lechavot eya b'tochah. What is this stuff you're reading? What is this about?
So this is, he's saying like this, that I'm telling you now an idea, a homiletic, based on this idea of fire. Because you're telling me
who's
about
this?
What?
Who's saying this?
This is Rav Yitzchak Nafka brought this to us. He's teaching this.
Okay, fine.
Right?
So he's saying what?
He's saying, first and foremost, I have this pasuk, this verse that we just said in Exodus 22:5, right?
Got it.
It comes out on its own, but then the person who kindled it's on the hook. So he says that God is also saying something very similar to this idea of starting a fire. That when God destroyed the temple, or when the temple, let's say it this way, when the temple was destroyed, it says, I, God, kindled the fire in Zion. Okay? He has kindled a fire inside which has devoured its foundations, i.e. that God is saying the way that the temple, understand, the destruction of the temple is similar to someone starting a fire. Okay? You hear?
Destruction of the temple, yes.
And so too, it says, he's saying from Zechariah, he's saying that God's also saying, for I will be for her a wall of fire round about. Okay, so meaning that when it comes to the rebuilding of the temple, which Zechariah is referring to, it's also within regard to like fire. Okay. Okay, so that the idea basically is saying here is that there's something in fire in terms of the destruction and the rebuilding of the temple that's going on. Okay, so there is a halacha that can be learned from the verse in Exodus. As the verse begins with the damage caused through one's property, if a fire breaks out and concludes with the damage caused by one's body, like we said, the one who has kindled the fire. This indicates that when a damage is caused by fire, it is considered as though the person who kindled the fire caused the damage directly with his body.
Correct.
That serves to say to you that the liability for his fire damage is due to its similarity to his arrows, meaning he did it. Even though fire never is direct, it's always an indirect, at least when you're watching it. You see a guy who lights a fire, it goes and travels and then does the damage. Seems to be indirect. We're saying, we look at it as if you did it directly. So just this one who shoots an arrow and causes damage is liable because the damage was caused directly through his actions. So too, one who kindles a fire that causes damage is liable because it is considered as though the damage were caused directly by his actions.
Got it.
Okay?
Fine.
Okay, so now, the question is, what is the homiletic? What's this idea of, he's kind of very cryptic here. He's just saying that the Holy One, blessed be he said, although the fire broke out of the temple due to the sins of the Jewish people, it is incumbent upon me to pay restitution for the fire that I kindled. So it's true. It's true that the Jews sin. The Jews deserve for the temple to be destroyed. But God is saying that, and what Rav Yitzchak Naft is teaching here, is that because of the fact, meaning the way that the Navi, which is here, it's Jeremiah, wrote Lamentations, okay?
Yeah.
So the fact that he says that a fire came out, the Lord, he has kindled a fire in Zion, Yasas Esh Bat Zion, V'tochal Disodoseha, why use that analogy? Why say that the fire, God sent out a fire? Like, why use the word, like, why would you, like give that, like, imagery of the fire being started by God? Okay, so as if to say that it, although when we're on the ground and we're watching this, it's not God that destroyed the temple, but we saw the enemies of the Jewish people entered, and they're the ones who destroyed the temple, right? But what Jeremiah is telling us, when, and this is what Yitzchak Naft is saying, is the fact that it uses the word this imagery of fire, that fire went out and burnt the temple, is to say that God is the one who caused it to happen. It's true that he had his intermediaries, or the messengers, the ones who carried out the mission.
But goes, what's the point? Yeah, okay, so God started the fire for the temple.
Okay, so therefore, meaning what? So that God is the one, just like Aish, even though, like, we look at fire and say, once it's lit, it doesn't seem to have any connection back to the one who started the flame, right?
Right.
We still hold the one who started accountable. We're saying what Jeremiah is saying is, in Eicha, he's saying it's God that caused this to happen. He's saying, right, like this. He's saying, the Holy One, blessed be He. He's saying, right, he's saying that the Holy One, blessed be He, said that although the fire broke out in the temple due to the sins of the Jewish people, it is incumbent upon me to pay restitution for the fire that I kindled. So
who's me to pay restitution? The Almighty?
Yeah, that God is saying, I'm the one who did this. So it might be that you deserved it, no problem. And it's the you know, in both these cases, it was like the enemies of the Jewish people that came in, the different armies, armies that came and defeated and destroyed the temple. They did it. But how do we look at it? How do we understand it? We understand it that it was God. And it was like the idea of fire. That even though it seems to be removed, the person who causes it is the one that starts the fire. God started the fire. Therefore, God is responsible. He's on the hook. But then it says, so too, and I will build it with fire in the future. So it's to say,
I will make restitution.
But he says, I will build it with fire, right? He'll make restitution, but the idea is, I'll do it with fire. What does that mean? So the Maharal Prague, he says that what's going on here is that using the fire as your way of, you know, communicating some message here, the fire is an indicator to the idea that the same way that as we watch the events unfold in the destruction, it didn't look like God was involved. We're saying, no, it's exactly, God started the fire. That the nature of this thing, this all happened because God allowed it to happen. And that it was, hence the analogy of fire, and the way we look at it is that the one who started it is responsible. God started, he's responsible, because God is the one ultimately that made it all happen. So too in the... Yeah?
Go ahead.
So too in the rebuilding... Okay, so too in the rebuilding, that's what's going to happen as well. That you're going to have all this stuff happening that will look like it's happening on its own in a way, or outside of God's direct involvement. But the answer is, it's the analogy of fire, the one who starts a fire and their responsibility. That God, that the fact that Zechariah is using and saying, "Va'ani ayah la chomat esh saviv lechavod ayah betocha," so he's saying, like, I says the Lord will be for her a wall of fire round about, and I will be the glory in her midst. Why use the fire as the analogy?
Go ahead. Go back. Say it again.
Why are we using fire as the analogy for the rebuilding of the temple?
So he's saying
that because, again, this idea of how we understand the phenomena of fire, that fire is this thing that on the face of it looks like it's completely independent on its own. Happening on its own. But the idea, the message is that it might look like that on the face of things. But as we know with fire, fire doesn't start on its own, right?
Right.
So too, you know, this is what's happening.
I'm sort of stunned by this idea that somehow God's going to pay restitution. God makes no mistakes.
It's not a mistake. Who says mistakes? It wasn't a mistake. That's the point. That's a good point. It's not that it was a mistake. It's not at all a mistake. You hear?
Why is it to pay restitution?
Because even though it wasn't a mistake, I'm the guy who started the fire.
I see.
You hear what he's saying? So the Gemara is saying, that's exactly what he said. Even though the Jews deserved it, nevertheless, yeah. I'm saying to you guys, I started that fire. Therefore, I owe you. But also understand the nature of fire. This phenomenon called fire, as we see, the halacha is struggling to try to figure out how do I look at fire when it comes to the laws of damages, right? And
I
so we
it.
See, right? So we see that fire.
Yeah.
So we see that fire has.
I get all that. I'm just having trouble wrapping my head around is the idea that God would then do something for which He knows is going to cause damage. Like He knows, like.
So that's the idea. Good, it's good. So that's exactly what you're asking a good question. That's what we're going towards, is that in that situation, it was necessary for things to be destroyed. Meaning things got to a point, it was so corrupt at the time of the temple, when before it got destroyed, there was such a meltdown in terms of everything. So it needed to be destroyed. It was actually a blessing. The Jewish people needed to have their temple destroyed at the time. So, but Hashem is saying, at the same time, I'm the one who started the fire. So even though it was deserved, I started the fire, therefore I'm responsible for restitution. But I'm also... But the Maharal says that the point of what he's saying here, Rav Yitzchak Naaf is saying, but Hashem's also going to start the fire that's going to be, meaning the concept of the rebuilding is going to be similar in its way, which would say that it's going to look the same way, that it's going to look like we're, you know, it's going to be happening, at least according to this version, we're going to have it so that God or whatever is going to be kind of like removed in a way, in the sense that it's going to be played out the same way that it happened in the destruction. Mm. The same way the destruction happened in a fire type of way, the way we look at fire in this context of who do we hold accountable? Who pays the bill for this? You know?
I get it. I understand all that. I get it. So I'm trying to wrap my head around the idea that like God purposely then destroyed the temple, like started the fire and destroyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess he's saying, and I'll give you restitution. I don't know. I feel like I'm stuck. Like God could do anything. Like what? You know. I guess he's not giving up on it. He's not giving up on the Jewish people.
Correct.
Like
correct.
He's not giving up on them.
Correct.
But I guess the idea is like that God made a mistake.
It's not, but there's no mistake. It's not a mistake. Why?
No.
Let me ask you this.
The idea that like I give someone who's intellectually disabled a burning. You gotta go.
No, it's okay.
If I give someone who's intellectually disabled a burning stick and they cause a fire and burn down the house, then I'm liable because I gave that person who has little judgment. It's almost equivalent as you'd imagine like. God would know that the judgment is poor to cause a fire, right? I'm trying to express it articulately. Where I'm stuck. If you give someone fire and it damages and burns down a house, then you're liable.
Right. But let's say in this case we're saying that it could be God did it intentionally. He intentionally because he saw that this was necessary. But I intentionally
it's
burned down.
Like, it's almost like there's a lack of judgment when you give somebody a fire and you know that they're not capable of understanding it. Then the person who gave it lacked the judgment. But God doesn't lack judgment.
Where's the lack of judgment? He's saying that
I gave a retarded person a fire. What was I doing? That was ridiculous. Why would you do that?
So listen to what he says here. So here he quotes this like this.
In the
this.
Same way.
Well, listen to what he says here. Listen to what. So listen to this. He says what Rav Yitzchak Nafcha is trying to tell us through these connecting these two verses, one from the Lamentations and one from Zechariah. He says what's hinted here is that God is different than man, in the sense that in the thing that God destroyed with, he actually also brings the healing.
Okay, yes. So there's the difference.
So is it literally fire? Or, so you could say literally fire, he's able to take fire and be destructive and also building with the same thing. Okay.
Okay.
Or what really is being communicated here is not necessarily that it's fire per se, as much as the elements of what, when you talk about fire, and the way we said it, more you take a step back and you say, look, fire is weird because it's not a direct, it's more of an indirect type of thing that I'm damaging. It's like, right? So, therefore, you don't see necessarily the hand of the arsonist, you know? It's like, you know, the hand might look like it's not there. You don't know. But we know that not all fires, but many fires start because of arson, because of, someone started, lit the match.
Right.
So that's what we're saying here, that what's going on in the destruction is the same way that the rebuilding will occur as well. And it went with the exact same format. So you're seeing that, like, God's hand is going to be there, but somewhere, not as direct as,
as overt.
Right? But in a way, think of it this way. Part of the shock that went on at the time was, like, the people who came in and destroyed, they said, wow, God must be gone, because how could God let people like us come in and destroy his temple? It must be that God is no longer, his power's been taken away, or, all those question marks about the efficacy or of this God of the Hebrews, But the answer is that no, that God let this happen. So too, in a way, like, it's going to be, you're going to have this type of redemption and rebuilding that's going to have that kind of element of, the hand is there, but it's a little bit more hidden. The same way that
I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I get it.
So that's the idea. It's interesting, okay. Right? So you see that. So Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, it's kind of cool. What he's doing is he's saying, guys, I happen to have a great one here that I can actually teach you two things. A halachic idea of how we understand damages when it comes to fire. And so, too, I can also show you this idea, this concept of what was going on at the time of the temple being destroyed and what's going to be in the future. That when God, when it comes to, the future rebuilding the temple, it's going to have this similar type of phenomena, right? That
the idea is that there are constant opportunities for growth and rebuilding that are presented to you. Oh, here we go. Mysteries of mystery, experience the mysteries revealed. Like, the idea is that, like, there's constantly things that come our way that could lead to better improvement of ourselves.
Okay.
Insofar as the fire is not directly being, like, if God wanted to rebuild a temple, he can make all the stones come together and, like, and be built.
Right. So you know what's interesting about this? I'll tell you what's interesting. There's another tradition that says that in the third temple, it's just going to come down from, it's just going to drop down from the sky. Okay.
Yeah.
So now, okay, that's not what's being said here per se, I don't think. Although maybe, but you know what's interesting? The way the technology is going, you have a 3D printer. Right? So that concept of something just happening and dropping down from the sky and a 3D printer, not so
similar.
Not yet. So it's, what's amazing is when you start to see, like we talked about, Did you see that idea about the exact, almost incredible ability to calculate the cycles of the moon? Did you see
I'm
that?
talking about that. I'm
Okay,
talking about
right. We
that.
talked about that. So you'll start to see, like in the writings of Tanakh and prophecies, things that are from thousands of years ago, describing things that now we're starting to get, like,
That are
didn't people
occurring.
200 years ago would think, what is this talking about? But it's actually starting to happen. So, here,
It's interesting. It's interesting. Like, could someone 100 years ago have said, "What are you talking about is going to come out of the sky and drop down?" I guess the question is like yet they stay true and figured, I don't know. Like, it's sort of like when you're in the middle of it's hard to see where the end game is going to
Correct,
be.
correct.
And so maybe what this is saying is that, like, there's going to be stuff coming your way throughout life that essentially can be like fire, that it can ultimately downstream cause some event to occur, good, bad,
Right.
fire, and also good. And that you have to be aware and open to the fact that these events are occurring for a reason.
Right. So that's right, and that's and the answer ultimately is that I mean, it's so clear. It's hard for us to like admit it, but we are so limited, and we're so we see things in a very limited way. That over time we're able to see things in a more global or more, we're able to expand the understanding of like what was happening at a certain point in time. When we're going through it, it's very difficult. But that's what they talk about, this idea of having, like, when you understand, like, this, what God's saying, this is how I work. My hand sometimes is very much hidden, so to speak, but I'm pulling the trigger.
Yes.
I'm starting the fire, so to speak. That, but if we have that in mind, that's ultimately what happens. So it also gives us tremendous comfort, and also says, okay, let's get on the bandwagon. That's where it's going. Let's go with this, because it's coming from a very, from a place like that, it's coming from a very high place, a lofty place. So maybe we don't
Right, for
understand
sure.
it, but we have to have that kind of faith. So yeah. But
Well, there you go.
it's a pretty unbelievable, right? You see this amazing, like the way he's that Rav Yitzchak Nafka, like first he's like, here, I'm gonna get you both with this halacha and with this, and it's very, and not only that, but like you see how halachic ideas and agadata, like, this philosophical ideas, how much they're intertwined, like one is like getting the other, and vice versa. It's very interesting. Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the story with that.